she talks about when you're listening to a story, you know, you have two hands that you can hold information in, right? And once you get to the point where like you're juggling, you can't hold any more information. It's not like when you're reading a story and you can go back and look and confirm details. People are trying to hold all of this information in their brains while they're listening to your story. So you don't want to overwhelm them. You want to give them enough that they can hold so they can still carry it through.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here with Aaron Barker. Aaron, what's
Hello.
Up? How are you?
Hi.
What's happening?
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to be here with you, to see you here on video. I've heard your voice because you are the executive director and co-founder at the Story Collider. For all anyone who is under a rock and doesn't know this yet, Story Collider is a weekly podcast, true personal stories about science. I looked this up, Aaron. You guys are ranked top 0.5% in the world. So very popular podcast, guys. And as a storyteller, Aaron was the first woman to win the Moth's Grand Slam storytelling competition twice. Her stories have been featured on public radio multiple times, including PRX's The Moth Radio Hour, and many podcasts such as Moth, Risk, Family Ghosts, and many more. One of her stories was included in the New York Times bestseller book, The Moth 50 True Stories. So this is just your bio. At the end of the day, obviously you kick butt. Obviously, Story Collider is a great podcast. But let's get started, Aaron, why you do what you do. What is your fascination with these two categories here, science and storytelling? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, when I first got started with Story Collider, I didn't know that much about the science world. This was kind of my first entrance into it. This all came about because I took a storytelling class when I first moved to New York City, taught by Margot Lightman at the Upright Citizens Brigade. And in that class, I met a physicist named Ben Lilly, who had decided to stop being a physicist and move to New York and do something in theater about science. And I thought, that's weird. I don't know anyone else who goes all the way to becoming a physicist and decides to stop and do theater instead. People where I come from don't make decisions like that. So I thought, this guy is fascinating. And I got to know him and really started to understand what it meant to him to be able to tell stories about science. He really believed in this idea and the power of it. And he hosted his first show along with another physicist named Brian Wecht out in Queens here. And when I attended, I was kind of in awe of the fact that even though these stories were about science, which is something that I had considered, you know, very dry and boring, but also something that would be over my head and hard for me to understand. But these personal stories that were being shared at the show he was hosting were very powerful. They felt very relevant to me. They were emotionally engaging to me, and it was the most connected that I had ever felt with science. And so I got really fascinated. I'm always fascinated when storytelling can illuminate something for people that, you know, maybe they normally wouldn't be interested in. And so I was really excited about this and immediately wanted to get involved. And since then, that was 12 years ago almost, it's just been this journey of learning more about the science world and really what it means to people to share stories about science. And I've learned some incredible things. For example, there's a scientist named Jeff Shinsky. He and his colleague did a study where they had community college students listen to our stories and other stories, personal stories about science over the course of a semester. And he found that compared to the students who weren't assigned these stories, the students who were assigned these stories came away at the end of the semester expressing more interest in science, seeing more of a place for themselves in science, having a less stereotyped view of who could be a scientist. And they even got a better grade in their science class. And that to me really speaks to how powerful stories are, that they can bring you into this community, that they can make you see possibilities that you didn't see before.
The power of story. You see possibilities you didn't see before. Builds community, builds passion. For me, it helps me better understand things. And tell me if I'm wrong, we're telling stories every day in our lives, whether we know it or not. Is that the case?
Oh, totally. Human beings are storytelling machines, 100%.
Yeah. And so you at Story Collider talk, you know, stories about science, but all of us are telling stories in our lives, no matter what we do in our professional context. What I know, the most open-ended question I could ever ask anyone, what does make a good story? What are there certain elements I should focus on to tell a good story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most important thing is for your story to have an arc, for there to be a change from the beginning to the end. That's really what makes a story, is that change. Anything else is just an anecdote. But it's the change in the story that is really powerful, especially in terms of persuasion, especially if you're talking to someone whose mind you want to change. There's this author, Max Linus. He wrote High Tide, How the Climate Crisis is Engulfing Our Planet. And he did this study where he gave three different versions of talks. One explains why he's in favor of GMOs, one in which he explained how he changed his mind about GMOs, and then a third one where he told the story of how he changed his mind about GMOs. And when he did the first talk where he just explained why he's in favor of them, one out of 30 people in the audience changed their minds. And then when he did the second where he explained how he changed his mind, one out of 23 people changed their mind. And then when he told the story of how he changed his mind about GMOs, when he brought them into that experience, one out of 5 people changed their minds. So that's huge, right?
Yeah.
If we could show people how we changed, we can bring them along with us on that journey and help them see it the same way. I think about, we recently did this show in partnership with Springer Nature about food sustainability. And, you know, people are always saying we shouldn't waste food, we should eat more sustainably. And, you know, that kind of goes in one ear and out the other. But when I think about the stories that these experts told in the show about how they started to realize that they wanted to eat more sustainably, now, ever since then, I'm now like thinking about it a lot more. I'm like wanting to have the same excitement about it that they had. I'm like, I've been freezing my milk now, my leftover milk. Okay. So that change is so key to bring people on that journey of change with us. And then I think if you want to connect with people, for them to be engaged enough to go on that journey with you, you have to be an authentic character in that story that draws them in. You have to set up who you are. I mean, it could be as simple as you know, one of our producers, Gastor Amante, starts off one of his stories by saying, "I didn't have lab coat energy," you know, just a line that lets people know who you are at the start of the story so they can connect with that. And then, you know, building in scenes, creating moments that people can visualize so they can enter into that story with you and feel like they're there along with you.
Love it. Okay, so you need a story arc. You want to be authentically you, be real with who you are, and then build in individual scenes. How microscopic? So how microscopic should I go with my scenes? And the part of why I ask that is there's certain books I'll use, for example, they get so microscopic with the descriptions that I get a little bit lost in the scene. So what should a scene look like?
That's a great question. And I think there's different answers for different contexts. You know, if you have a lot of space, if you're writing a whole book, maybe you have time to get into the real details. If you're telling a story out loud, you probably just want to give people enough of a sense that they can build out the world on their own in their minds. You don't want things to get so bogged down in details that people can't follow the thread of the story. It's like Elmore Leonard, the writer, one of the best writers of all time. His famous quote is, "Never start with the weather." So never start with a descriptive detail that is not relevant to character or plot, because you want to draw people in by sharing who you are. But when it comes to building out these scenes, like I said, I just give people enough so that they can build it out on their own. Like I have a scene in a story where I talk about my crush in high school was walking down the hallway when he with his nose in a book, and he was so distracted by A Tale of Two Cities that he ran right into a garbage can. And that was when I knew I was in love. And so I think you can build a picture of that in your mind, right? And I'm not telling you what color the lockers are, what specific hallway we're in my store, in my school, what the tile looks like, or even really what he looks like, right? But you've built an image in your mind just based on that. It probably looks like your own high school. Yeah. Probably looks like somebody you knew in high school, but that's okay.
And I like you, A Tale of Two Cities. So there was a book that's A Tale of Two Cities that's a descriptor, but you don't have to describe the color of, you know, the lockers and the clothing he's wearing and this and that. Just enough information to get the point across. Okay, so you don't want to be over descriptive, but you do want to have description. Wow, so I feel like this is like a 10-part episode. I do encourage people to listen to Story Collider because I learn a lot just from osmosis of hearing great storytellers tell stories. But are there any cold, hard, like red flags that your storytelling needs work? Is there any things that people seem to do wrong when they're telling stories? Anything I can work on and at least be mindful that I could be making these mistakes?
Well, that's a good question. I think you pointed out something really important, which is the best way to become a better storyteller is to listen to stories and think about what resonates with you. Because I think that'll say a lot about what resonates with people generally. But in terms of red flags, I think something a lot of people do, especially when they're starting out, especially when they're telling their first story, is try to tell the story of their whole life in one go. And
that's what I do. Yeah.
It's very tempting, right?
When I was a kid, my father was drinking alcohol and I was looking at, and then I, 2 minutes later, I'm to adulthood. I'm chronologically telling my whole life story. So I do that, guys.
Yeah, you could tell it's maybe somebody's first go when they start out. It was a dark and stormy night when I was born. But you don't need everything. You got to remind yourself that you can tell multiple stories. You can tell many stories throughout your whole life, and you don't have to put all of the context just into one. I think it's really important to focus on a specific arc, a really specific thread of your story. As we say, a dramatic question. And it's important not to bog it down with too many dramatic questions, too many arcs, or else people aren't going to be able to follow the story, especially if it's an oral story that you're telling in 10 minutes. People don't want to be overwhelmed. One of our producers, Christine Gentry, has this amazing analogy where she, let me see if I can get this right. She talks about when you're listening to a story, you know, you have two hands that you can hold information in, right? And once you get to the point where like you're juggling, you can't hold any more information. It's not like when you're reading a story and you can go back and look and confirm details. People are trying to hold all of this information in their brains while they're listening to your story. So you don't want to overwhelm them. You want to give them enough that they can hold so they can still carry it through.
Got it. So don't overwhelm people with crazy juggling. I'm the most, my literary prowess is just on. First off, Aaron, I'm so simple-minded. I use small words. And when someone's got literary prowess and use big words, I'll get lost. So you kind of want to keep them, kind of realize your audience is part of the story. And what was it? You said dramatic questions. Mm-hmm. I think, what's a dramatic question?
The dramatic question is the question that you're asking at the start of the story and you're answering at the end. So, for example, The Lion King, the dramatic question would be, will Simba ever become this great king like his father, Mufasa? Right. And we see that question answered by the end of the story, and we're in tension with it throughout the whole story as these various events take place. And it's really the dramatic question that is driving the tension of the story. It's what we're all wondering. We're on the edge of our seats wondering how this question is going to be answered the whole time. So it's important to ask it at the beginning and not to answer it until the very end.
Okay. Do I quite literally ask the question out loud, or should I literally ask that question then?
Well, sometimes. I think especially in oral storytelling, it can help to put it out there just for clarity's sake. Put it out there. What is intention in your story? But I think it can be expressed in various ways. Like in the Lion King, it's very clear what Simba wants and what's standing in his way of answering this question throughout the movie. So I think that's the most important thing.
Okay. So I've got an arc. I have a dramatic question. I've got a couple scenes that I want to bring into my story. Is there a way to provide closure? Well, is there a way for me to know like how to end this story? Because I could talk all day, Aaron. Is there a good way to provide closure once you have those elements?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of people struggle with ending their stories.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that you want to end as close to answering that dramatic question as you can, because that is when the audience, the tension will be relieved. They'll start to feel like the story is over once they have the answer to that question. You won't want to keep going on too long. A lot of people want to explain to the audience what the story has meant after they've answered the question, what it meant to them to answer the question. And sometimes that's really a little too much, because the audience kind of wants to make that deduction on their own. And you want to trust the audience, knowing that you've told a great story, that they can figure out what it means and make that interpretation. And if you kind of beat them over the head with the explanation at the end, they'll feel a little bit annoyed. They'll feel a little bit like their intelligence has been disrespected, right?
I love that. Yeah, let them kind of come to that assertion on their own as well with you. Okay, so we've got some basic guidelines here. And let's say I'm ready. I want to go out and tell stories. And we're going to be telling stories every day with our family and our friends. But I have no problem talking to my family and my friends. I'm comfortable there. What happens when I go on stage? And more the question is, for you, what happens when you go on stage? I know that So Matthew Dix recommended you, and Matthew's incredible. So hats off to you that Matthew respects and honors you that much to nominate you for the show, Aaron. See, this is what happens to me. So I'll go on stage and then I'll lose my words, or I'll forget my story. And it's not like that free-flowing excitement I have with my friends. I'm in a professional context or a presentation context, and sometimes I choke up. And someone like Matthew, he's like, well, I have no problem with it at all. I just go up and talk. He's just a natural. It seems like you're a little more soft-spoken like I, and a lot of the listeners are as well. Do you get nervous when you're getting on stage? What is the experience for you, and how do you overcome any of the anxieties you might have?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not everybody can be like Matt. As amazing as he is. When I first started out, I actually had a really deep fear of public speaking.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was that person who we had a public speaking class required as part of my journalism degree, and I saved it for the very last quarter of my degree. I was dreading it. Every night before I had to do a presentation, I'd have this feeling of like, maybe I could change my name and move to another country and I'd never have to do this presentation. So I really relate. And I really started to overcome it when I took this storytelling class that I was talking about the night before we had our graduation show, which was our first time performing in front of an audience. I got so worked up that I broke out into hives all up my left arms. I was freaking out. But, you know, then I got up on stage and I did it and I didn't die. And that was an amazing feeling to face my fear and to get through it. And so ever since then, every time I go on stage, it gets a little bit easier. And in science, they call this exposure therapy. Mm. And basically all that means is just facing your fear until you're not afraid of it anymore. And I'm sorry to say, that's the best way to get past anything you're afraid of, unfortunately. But in the meantime, while you're on the road to that, I think there's a few things you can do. If you are the type of person who has trouble maybe remembering your place in your story, I would make sure everything is connected in your story. And this is good for the story too. One event should lead to the next. And that's the great thing about telling a story instead of just giving a list of bullet points about something is a story should be connected through causation so that one scene leads to the next scene, leads to the next scene. And when you're practicing, it's a good idea to focus on those transition points to make sure you have those transitions really clear in your head in particular. If you are the type of person who maybe gets nervous on stage and just needs a second to collect yourself, take a beat and pause. When you're on stage, time feels like it's moving forever. But for the audience, it's really just a finger snap.
Yeah.
You can pause. You can take that beat and the audience will wait with you. And it won't feel like any time at all to them. So just reassure yourself about that, I think. There have been times when I've lost my place in a story and I've just kind of like gone like this. And the audience just thinks I'm getting very emotional. Don't tell anyone. Don't give away that secret.
I love that.
But you can always take a beat.
So you can take a beat. You know that exposure therapy, over time, it'll get better. You aren't going to die. And I presume that every time you do it, you are farther and farther from even feeling like death. That's the exposure therapy.
That's right.
I'm nerding out because I've got 3 speeches next month and I haven't done 3 speeches like in my lifetime as a professional at this scale. So I'm like, oh my God, scared to death. But it sounds like by the 3rd one, I'll be kicking ass. So as long as I don't die the first 2, which I don't think I will, I'll be fine. And okay. So we could go all day, but this question just came to mind. Is it always a good time to tell a story? Is there right or wrong times to tell a story? If I'm in a professional context and everything's fast paced, I don't sit down and put my leg on the desk and say, Aaron, let me tell you a story. Maybe I do. Is there right or wrong times to utilize storytelling?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot with scientists. That's a question that comes up for them quite a bit. And I would say there are some times when it's really not appropriate. For example, when COVID was first happening 2 years ago, no one wanted Dr. Fauci to come up to the mic and tell a story. They just wanted the crucial information they needed to know what was happening, right? So in times where there's some emergency, when people just really need straight information, that's probably not the time. And then there are times when maybe like some elements are appropriate and some aren't, where some levels of vulnerability are appropriate, but not maybe the same level of vulnerability that you might use with your friends and family. For example, if you're, you know, presenting your thesis, if you're presenting on a scientific topic, maybe you'll want to a professional audience, maybe you'll want to structure that talk so it moves in a narrative way. So you maybe pose that dramatic question at the beginning and answer it by the end. But maybe you won't want to talk about like your breakup with your high school boyfriend in that setting. So maybe some tools are appropriate, but some levels of vulnerability not appropriate.
Consider the setting, but still utilize the tools when you can. Awesome. So let's talk about Story Collider as a business, because a lot of people know the podcast. As we mentioned, you guys are top 0.5% worldwide, so lots of listeners, but you guys are more than just in the entertainment business, right? You offer workshops and services. Tell me a little bit about the business leg of Story Collider.
Yeah, we're actually a 501c3 nonprofit. And our mission is to reveal the vibrant role that science plays in all of our lives through the art of storytelling. So this means science plays a role in everyone's lives, whether they're scientists or not, no matter who they are, no matter where they come from, science plays a role. That's really what we believe in as an organization. And we believe in telling those stories, bringing those stories from as a diverse spectrum of people as we can to our audience to show that science belongs to everyone. So we do that through our podcast and through our live events that we have across the US, the UK, and Canada. And we also believe in creating storytellers so that those stories about science can be told by more and more people around the world. And that's where our workshop program comes in. So we have a public workshop that individuals can sign up for every month at storycollider.org that covers really the basics, the introduction to storytelling. And sometimes we have electives as well. For example, one of our producers and board members, Gastor Almonte, he's a comedian. He runs some elective classes on how to make your stories funny, how to work on your performance skills when you're telling a story, some electives like that. And we also host workshops for private groups, universities, laboratories, corporations, other nonprofits will bring us either virtually or in person to their folks, and we'll work on them with a workshop that is tailored to what they want to tell stories about.
I love this. I need to learn how to incorporate humor better, because it's like I'm either telling jokes or telling stories, but incorporating it into my storytelling would be tremendously helpful for me or any of the listeners and their teams. How do they learn more about this kind of stuff? Well, where should I go to take a workshop?
You can go to storycollider.org/workshops. Find out more information there. Always have public workshops every month. Private workshops, you can reach out to us for more information.
Awesome. I know I'll attend a public workshop, and then the goal is to get people together for a private one or get together. I don't know, but I want to get my feet wet. I want to learn this stuff. I know a lot of listeners do as well. Aaron, how do you feel about the rapid fire round? So what we do here is short, sweet, either or questions. You can cross off the question and ignore it. You can fill in the blank. Honestly, you can tell a story. We don't have to be too rapid. but we're just going to go rapid fire and have some quick ones here. Sound good?
All right, let's do it.
Cats or dogs?
Oh, dogs for sure.
Coffee or tea?
That's a tough one. Ultimately, coffee, I think.
Okay. A lot of people say both because it's such a tough one, right?
I do love both, I have to say.
Do you have a favorite season?
Fall. Fall is the only bearable season here in New York City where I live.
I'm in upstate New York, so I'm with you there. We get the lake effect snow. We get it. So
beautiful foliage in upstate New York in the fall.
Yes. I'm about 4 to 5 hours, but Adirondacks are right around the corner, and I love the foliage there. Awesome. Let's do pastime. So you can't say storytelling, you can't say reading, writing, nothing related to your day job. Any favorite pastimes?
Well, I do enjoy baseball. Not so much playing it myself. I used to when I was younger, but watching it. I'm a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays, which is a fandom that I married into.
Okay.
What else? Movies. I'm a big movie buff. I see one or two movies every week.
Love it. Love it. We'll do a scenario here. So if you had an opportunity to have dinner, coffee, or tea, whatever you'd like, but sit down at a table and just tell stories all day with at most five, but at minimum two or three people, live or dead, who would you want to sit down with at that dinner table and just tell stories with all day?
Oh my gosh, this is such a hard question, Ben.
Of course I put it in the rapid fire round when it's like the hardest question I've got, yeah.
Oh, trying to think. I have to say, one of my favorite guests we've ever had on Story Collider is the writer John Ronson. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
He wrote The Psychopath Test and Men Who Stare at Goats, a bunch of other really wonderful books. I think he's so fascinating, and I could probably listen to him talk all day. So I might put him on that list. Who else? This is such a hard question. I could probably think of a million people.
Which is fine. Even if you want, you don't have to. You can even think about this for longer, and we'll put an answer in the show notes. I ask questions, Aaron, that I sometimes don't know how to answer.
Who would you say?
My go-to is always Gandhi. Gandhi, Oprah, Mother Teresa. I find myself, like most of us, being more materialistic than I'd like. And even with all I give and all I connect and all I do, I still feel like I'm more selfish than I should be and need to be. And then I look at these completely selfless people like a Gandhi or a Mother Teresa, and I just, through osmosis, I just want to be around people like that. If we were telling stories, I'd probably invite you and Matthew Dix, because that would be just like storytelling. I'd be the silliest one at the table, but I just listen to you guys all day. So,
yeah, Matt's always a good guest. That's for sure.
I believe it. Cool. I think we covered a lot. And guess what happens if someone has questions? They can go to the show notes. Your information's there. Was it storycollider.org.com?
.org.
Storycollider.org. Any other great places for people to reach out to you, whether it's to follow you, email you, start a conversation, anything like that? Where should we go?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Aaron H. Parker. You can find me there. Same thing on Instagram. But most is at storycollider.org. And I'm not sure when this episode comes out, but we're planning our big annual fundraiser here in New York City at the Bell House in Brooklyn on June 1st. We call it the Proton Prom.
Okay.
So everyone brings their science prom style. So we would love to see everybody there. It's going to be a party.
I'm writing this down. So June 1st, guys. This is supposed to come out around then, but I don't have a date memorized. But what I'm going to do is, if this was going to come out on like June 3rd or something, I'll push you into the front. So this will come out right before that, June 1st. I got distracted because I was writing it down. What exactly is going on June 1st again? What can I look forward to?
It's our big annual fundraiser, the Proton Prom. So we're going to have Proton some special Prom. Guests sharing stories. Everybody is going to come out in their finest science prom wear to celebrate. We're going to have a good time down there at the Bell House.
I love it. I love it. Is that an annual event?
It is. Yeah, it actually started during COVID. So this is our first time doing it in person, which I am very excited about.
Awesome. So everyone bring your costume. If you can't make it, I'm sure Instagram and online, you'll be able to see pictures. You can start listening to Story Collider podcast and continue the conversation. Aaron, thanks for taking the time. I'm nerding out because this is stuff that I want to learn more about. And I'm just so blessed that you took the time to educate me and the audience today. And yeah, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. This was great.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.